Okay, folks, well, I got a little bad news. Our speaker for today, he had a problem in the server room and got called away to work. I guess we're going to have a little bit of discussion. We're going to kind of wing it here because our main speaker isn't here yet. If he shows up, we'll switch gears. But you know a thing or two about Bitcoin.
Yeah, I know one of the guys who invented his own ASIC miner.
Oh, okay.
Make sure you introduce yourself.
Oh.
Here.
Good.
Yeah.
One of these is.
Well, you gotta love the university type.
Hey, guys.
Here, I'll take that one. You use this one.
Okay.
Yep. Mic one.
Yeah, there.
Okay, you're good.
Hey, so I'm Chris. I'm a master's student at Tech, and I do Bitcoins in my spare time, along with a lot of other stuff. Bitcoins are a peer-to-peer currency. Not sure the best way to describe them. They have a website at bitcoin.com, I think it is, and you can look through a really well-made presentation on how they work and what you can do with them. Would anyone else like to join me up here who's done mining or traded or anything? This is kind of a... Okay. So, yeah.
I know some about them, but from the defensive stance, which I'll cover.
Defensive stance, okay.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
So I probably actually...
some of the economics.
Probably shouldn't tell you everything I've done with Bitcoins then, because you're the probably the guy who's been blocking my stuff.
No, actually not.
Okay. Okay. So, the Bitcoin mining, it's a way that people have been able to make money in the last year. Actually, this year, Bitcoins have been the best investment in the world. They're better than gold has been in the last 2 years. They started out being worth about 1 cent per Bitcoin a couple years ago, and this year they went up to $30 per Bitcoin. That's, 2,500% gain.
What color is your Ferrari?
Well, see, I started late, so I've only made about $1,500 off of it. But the trick these days is to either get into ASIC mining or get into the exchange market, because the coins themselves are not worth $30 at the moment. About 2 months ago, that's where they were at. Right now, they're at about $8. So they did crash a lot, and the good thing is that they're maintaining value. They didn't crash all the way down. People are still using them. It's a valid currency. It's starting to get validated. There are cases that are going to be coming up pretty soon that will help validate them further. Naturally, there are issues with them. If you've heard anything in the media about Bitcoins being used to buy and sell drugs online through Silk Road, that's one of the issues that's going to be addressed.
What do you mean, like medical marijuana?
I haven't really looked at the site, so I don't know what they're buying and selling, but I think it's some pretty bad stuff.
The question was, I asked if the drugs they were trading was medical marijuana.
I don't know, but I think they're harder.
I did that for a
minute.
Oh.
Yeah, give you a little background on them. Do you have a question? Yeah.
Why should... what the currency is used to buy for be a problem of the currency?
I agree. Dollars are traded for drugs, right?
Yeah, so I could go take a sack full of dollars, whatever denomination, and buy a nuclear generator.
The difference between the two is you can sort of kind of launder money with these. There's a exchange site called Mt. Gox that you may have heard got hacked recently. Actually, one of my accounts got hacked there too, and had to change all my passwords and stuff. But that's an exchange site where you can take bitcoins that you've mined or bought and exchange them for real currency. When you go to Mt. Gox, you'll have to create an account, and then you can use a service like Dwolla to dwolla.com to enter the actual dollars into your bank account. So there's kind of a process you go through, but it works.
Could you explain coin mining?
Sure. The idea is that the Bitcoin currency is it's designed in a way such that you can't double spend the coins. That's one of the issues with any peer-to-peer currency is if you say you give the coin to that's Walla, yeah. This is a site that you associate it with your bank account, and then you can convert currency online to currency that you can actually hold in your hand. And the exchange rate is really low. The people who put up these sites, like Mt. Gox and Dwolla, they made a ton of money off of Bitcoins. They're actually the biggest winners is the people who sold the shovels in this gold rush. If you look at like the Humble Indie Game Bundle, like the donations, Mt. Gox is on top of that for donations. They just give money away right now. so much of it. MTGOX. Yeah. Yeah, right. How about we bring up the...
Yeah, part of the question is, I'm still a little fuzzy on what Bitcoins are, how you acquire Bitcoins, how you exchange Bitcoins for real money,
okay.
What the concept of mining is, so all those things are...
Okay, mining aside, we'll get to that in a sec. The Bitcoin currency is, it's completely digital, of course, and you've got a wallet. Your wallet is a like a data file on your computer. That's that you have to keep secret, keep it to yourself. And from that wallet, you're able to put coins into it, and you can take coins out of it and send them to other people. Each wallet is given a number of public key addresses, and you're the only person with the private key, right? So you can authenticate transactions. If you give money to someone else, and then you give the same coin to a third party as well, the Bitcoin network decides who gets the coins. That's why it's peer-to-peer, is because they have to authenticate that sort of thing. And the way they do it is a number of computers on the internet, many, many machines right now, are constantly trying to solve a crypto challenge. They want to produce a hash where a certain number of the high bits in the resulting hash are all zeros. And whenever someone completes this crypto challenge, that authenticates your transaction. I'm not too good at explaining like why that works, but the website can get you into it. It does require a bit of crypto background to explain it well, so that's difficult to do on a panel like this. But it does work, so the important thing is it does work.
I really hardly had heard of even the term before I came here today. So my question is, first of all, what is the problem that this is solving? And could you give some background as to how this started? And then why is there any reason for the currency to become more valuable?
Why is it valuable? Well, I guess because there's impetus for people to get into it. That would be mining. I think a lot of the things that have contributed to its success so far has been that people have been getting coins for free, and then they can suddenly exchange them for money. And the reason why they can exchange them for money is because there have been people who set up sites where they can sell things, like graphics cards and computer parts and things like that. You can buy those with bitcoins, so that gives them real world value. I mean, initially you could do a bartering thing where you like buy a graphics card with bitcoins and then sell it on eBay for money. And then it got more direct and more direct, and things started kind of snowballing a bit until you have exchange status where people are exchanging them directly for money. I don't know. It's like any other currency. You've got, if you want to buy something overseas, you could do it with some kind of exchange market online, or you can do it with bitcoins. And bitcoins just happen to be a pretty good way to move things around.
So, besides buying bitcoins with other currencies, how do you get the bitcoins and bitcoins? How do you mine?
Oh, so there's going to be a fixed amount of coins in the long term.
Yeah, nobody,
So he was asking So how do you get the coins in the first place? Where do they come from? They just seem to appear out of nowhere. That's where the mining comes in. So you've got machines trying to solve that crypto challenge, and every time someone finishes the crypto challenge, they're rewarded with bitcoins. So because the reward is somewhat random and distributed all over the world and it's very difficult, people kind of form into pools of effort, and each pool is rewarded with a small number of bitcoins across the whole pool. So everybody helping out gets a small number of bitcoins. You've got single individuals who have a lot of hardware who are able to start their own pool, but the majority of like individuals will not do that.
The gentleman was asking about the whole point of this, and I wanted to kind of speak to that.
Okay.
Any currency that exists today is backed by a government. Currency in the United States at one point was backed by a precious metal. So you're basing your currency on something of value, something that has rarity. In bitcoins, the digital solutions to the cryptographic problems are a rarity. So you're putting CPU horsepower into solving this problem, and the pool of answers that are going to come out of this have a finite count to them. So there is a limit to the ultimate number of bitcoins that will ever exist. That is a fixed number.
Yes.
The mining that's going on is solving the cryptographic problem with a hash that has a certain number of leading zeros in it. And as the rate of Bitcoin mining increases, they increase the number of zeros in the hash that are required for the solution to keep the rate of mining at a constant level so that you don't have a logarithmic growth in achieving results. So the peer-to-peer network is in itself self-regulating. It is keeping the rate of mining at a constant level. And if you are mining, you are being rewarded with, say, 50 bitcoins, and that number will go down over time as mining goes up. So as why we're doing bitcoins, why do you want your money to depend on the single government that currency is on? Bitcoin itself is a worldwide currency. It is a digital currency. It doesn't depend on a government. It's not regulated, controlled by, and can't be traced from one individual to another. So let's say you live in a country where it's illegal to buy a widget. You can't use your currency in that government to buy a widget. But if you have bitcoins, they can't be traced back to you, but they have value to the guy that you're buying the widget from. So you can buy the widget with an untraceable currency that's guaranteed to be a one-time transaction. Once your bitcoins have been transferred from your wallet to their wallet, that goes into a crypto chain that is given to everyone that's in the Bitcoin system running the client. So that transaction is verified by everybody else that's running in the peer-to-peer network that transaction's valid.
Yeah, the idea is that in order to double spend, you'd have to fight the whole network, and no individual has enough computing power to do that.
If there's a good intro on the site, why don't we watch that, since this way we can all get on the same page?
Okay.
Is that something we can do?
I think so.
There's audio with it, if we can get that too.
That we can do, amazingly enough.
Thank you.
Where
So, as he was talking about, the difficulty of mining has been going down as people have developed better and better ways to solve the crypto hash challenge. And initially, people were doing it with CPUs. The original Bitcoin client was a CPU-based miner, where it was trying to run these hash count. Everyone knows what a hash is, real quick? A lot of people do, but just to give you the terminology, a hash is something that takes a known value, like a sentence or something, and turns it into a number, something that's fairly random and somewhat uniquely identifies the sentence. So only that one sentence will give you that value, unless there are two sentences that happen to collide and give you the same value, but it's fairly rare when that happens.
Do you know where the video ends?
Click one of the learn links. I think they updated the site since I looked at it last.
Yeah, I looked at this, but can you get a microphone for a second?
I think you were talking about hashing, and one of the things I've learned about hashes is typically it's an encryption, a one-way encryption where you never unencrypt, and provides you theoretically a unique value with a unique input. So, mm-hmm. But you only have a limited number of results that you can possibly get out of that, and I assume that's what's happening with Bitcoins, is limiting that total value you can get out of that. I kind of followed the conversation back here up to the point that you mentioned something, and maybe I got it wrong, that the Bitcoins, once a transaction takes place and is validated by the network at large, that they are no longer, they're not reused. Did I get that right, or is the receiver of those Bitcoins then have the opportunity to reuse those just like we use regular money?
Yeah, once the coin is transferred into someone else's wallet, they can respend it. That's true.
I recently sold a...
What is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is the first decentralized digital currency. Bitcoins are digital coins you can...
turn back up.
Wow. Send through the internet. Compared to other alternatives, Bitcoins...
I'll wait.
...have a number of advantages. Bitcoins are transferred direct...
It's either on or off.
...from person to person via the net, without...
Is there anything in between?
Going through a bank or clearinghouse.
Is that better?
This means...
There's a volume...
He has a volume right on his, too. Oh, okay. He has a volume over here.
I'm going to... Go ahead and talk.
Okay.
I'm going to answer that question, and then maybe that...
Yeah, go ahead and ask your question.
Check. I recently sold a nice guitar on eBay to a guy in the Netherlands, and PayPal, I mean, I haven't shipped it yet because I got the e-check on Wednesday or Tuesday, and it's going to clear today or tomorrow, whatever, it's a nightmare, but and plus PayPal takes a nice chunk of money, plus, I guess you have to pay eBay, but it's always annoyed me how much money PayPal takes in a transaction. How could Bitcoin have made that transaction better between the Netherlands and the United States?
So he's buying the guitar. So he could... there are lots of different exchange markets for different countries. Like in the UK, they use something different than the one for US dollars. The way that would go down is they would set up an account on... an exchange site like Mt. Gox, and they would also set up an account on something like Dwolla or whatever the local equivalent is, and they would put the money in their Dwolla account, transfer it over to their Mt. Gox account, exchange the dollars or, you know, pounds or whatever or euros over to the bitcoins, send them into your Bitcoin wallet, and you would do the reverse. So it would go into your account. But the issue with that whole process then is, well, it's not on a credit card. It's not something you can dispute. There are issues with that.
Gotcha.
If you really trust the guy, it might be a lower exchange rate.
It's probably better to stick
with that one. Also, the market has been fluctuating a lot. Last week, Bitcoins were worth $10, and this week they're worth $8, and next week maybe they're worth $11. So.
$25 a piece until Mt. Gox got jacked from.
Yeah, they were worth like 30 something.
Yeah. And then
I sold at 32.
That was probably the best choice.
Yeah, that was actually a really good time. There's a lot of really neat news, and it's an interesting like microcosm of economics. You can see it as it's a new currency, so there's a lot of really interesting stuff happening around it. If you're interested in, like I was, I didn't know anything about economics, and I still don't know very much about it. But it's a good way to get introduced to it without taking a ton of classes,
like
being a financial major.
Kind of like forex trading, right?
Yeah, it's a lot like trading gold, very, very similar to gold trading.
Centralized digital currency. Bitcoins are digital coins you can send through the internet. Compared to other alternatives, Bitcoins have a number of advantages. Bitcoins are transferred directly from person to person via the net, without going through a bank or clearinghouse. This means that the fees are much lower, you can use them in every country, your account cannot be frozen, and there are no prerequisites or arbitrary limits. Let's look at how it works. Bitcoins are generated all over the internet by anybody running a free application called a Bitcoin miner. Mining requires a certain amount of work for each block of coins. This amount is automatically adjusted by the network such that Bitcoins are always created at a predictable and limited rate. Your Bitcoins are stored in your digital wallet, which might look familiar if you use online banking. When you transfer Bitcoins, an electronic signature is added. After a few minutes, the transaction is verified by a miner and permanently and anonymously stored in the network. The Bitcoin software is completely open source, and anybody can review the code. Bitcoin is changing finance the same way the web changed publishing. When everyone has access to a global market, great ideas flourish. Let's look at some examples of how Bitcoins are already used today. You can purchase video games, gifts, books, servers, and alpaca socks. Several currency exchanges exist where you can trade your Bitcoins for dollars, euros, and more. Bitcoins are a great way for small businesses and freelancers to get noticed. It doesn't cost anything to start accepting them, there are no chargebacks or fees, and you'll get additional business from the Bitcoin economy. For your first Bitcoins and more information, visit reusecoins.com.
So that's a pretty good intro, I guess. There are a bunch of things that have happened since Bitcoins got introduced. There is now a Namecoin service, which is like a DNS service based on Bitcoin technology. So people who mine for Namecoins are able to help out with securing their DNS in a peer-to-peer way, as opposed to having a central DNS authority. That's actually a really, really good idea, and I hope that that keeps going. There are a bunch of scam sites, though, as well, that have popped up that you should probably be aware of. Don't help out things like iXcoin or IOCoin or any of these other services. Also, stick to Mt. Gox or one of the more reputable exchange sites, because this is real money. You know, use something that everyone else is using, that people know who's working on it, and they don't live like in China or something. It's not a good idea. Stick to the really big, well-known sites. Though, if you're a miner and you have a lot of hardware behind you, you can make a lot of money getting into one of these smaller things like IOCoins early, when you can mine a little bit and make a lot of them. When their value increases even slightly, then later on you can sell them for Bitcoins and make a lot of money that way. A friend of mine, the guy I was talking about who's making the ASIC miner, the first ASIC miner, he actually got in really early on iXcoins and IOCoins and made 300 Bitcoins off of that, which that's like $250, $100, or $2,500.
So, pardon me, but this seems like the worst kind of fiat currency I've ever seen. you said it's backed by, you know, the value of these crypto solutions. But to whom do these crypto solutions have value? I mean, it seems like just a fiat scheme.
I didn't say it was based on the crypto solutions. That was another gentleman. I do think it's not it's linearly related to what they're really based on. They're really based on energy cost, because what we're trading in Bitcoin is how much energy in joules does it take to generate a Bitcoin, and energy has real cost, and it's based on price of coal and everything else. It's interconnected with the rest of the economy.
Well, also, some people don't really think about this stuff unless you're like a central banker. The only value money has is based on your ability to trade it with somebody else who will accept it.
Faith.
And it goes back to a bit of faith there, although he said fiat, but... in some ways. And give you an example. I'd like your car, and he says, "Well, that'll be $2,300, please." And I say, "Here you go." He goes, "No, I only accept dollars." And I go, "Well, this is valuable to me. Here." And see, well, unless he accepts that value, it doesn't work. So really, what it is, it's a mechanism that allows you to store something that is attributed to you specifically, that can only that somebody else is willing to trade for through a agreed upon medium. That's all it is, and that's all currency is. It's just an agreed upon medium. It used to be when I was a kid, the gold was used to back the U.S. dollar. And people say, "Oh yeah, but see, that was based on a real tangible substance." Yes, as long as somebody else was willing to buy it from you. And that's ultimately what it comes down to. If they're not, if they're not willing to accept it as currency, but then it doesn't do you any good. Well, how many of you have seen the movie Cowboys and Aliens? Right? And yeah, it's a cool movie. And it has to do with
no spoilers,
but there are aliens and they're looking for gold. Okay. Now the townspeople, the guy says, what on earth are they gonna do with that? Are they gonna buy something? Well, think about it. Is gold important to you as a monetary, or is it important to you because you can make cell phones with it? They are high tech. They need the gold for tech. We were using it for money. Okay. Well, that's changed. And so as long as it's rare and as long as it's something of value and people are willing to exchange effort for it, it can be a currency. The question is, can I print it in my basement? If I can print, go in my basement and print $50 million in dollar bills this afternoon in my basement using a really high-tech color printer, that devalues the value of the dollar because anybody could do that, right? However, if it's rare and it's hard to get a hold of, i.e., it takes a lot of machine cycles, all of a sudden you have something that's rare. You can't just print them in your basement as many as you want, and people are willing to use it as an exchange medium for goods and services. And it's not dependent, going back to what you were talking about, it's not dependent on a government. For instance, in Germany, when they went to inflation, where you went in the afternoon, it took you a bucket load of Deutschmarks to buy a loaf of bread to wheelbarrow by that afternoon, literally, it eliminates that problem. It doesn't matter who's inflating or who's deflating. It's an exchange medium that's independent of a government.
The price went from 32 down to 8. I mean, that's inflation.
Well, actually, I would call that a bubble.
But it's still overall, in the way of exchanging bitcoins for physical goods, it represents inflation.
Sort of. The only difference is. There is one big difference. It's $32 for everybody on the planet.
Yeah.
Whereas inflation in Germany didn't affect us at all during World War II. It didn't affect us at all.
I'm sorry.
Well, it did sort of, but not directly.
Am I right in thinking, too, that the fluctuation in the value has to do with Bitcoin's, kernel programming or the way it's set up, as opposed to, I know there's not a guy named Ben Bernanke setting policy. to that's what I'm saying. So that makes it a lot better right there.
I don't know. I mean, there's not as many people involved in the Bitcoin market, so it's definitely going to fluctuate a lot more. And it's easier for people to control the market right now. One of the issues that I've seen, I'm not trying to paint like a rosy picture of this. There are issues with it. One of the things that I've seen is that right now there are a lot more bitcoins in the world than there are people willing to buy them. So at any point, the price could go way, way down. I mean, trading them is probably not a very good business decision. And a lot of my friends who've been in it have been expecting it to go down to about $10 per bitcoin for a long time. We think that's where it should be because if you look at how much energy cost it takes to produce one, you want kind of a break even. You don't want the energy cost to be less than the cost of the coins. You want it to be about on par. So the people mining for them are basically breaking even. That way you're not generating wealth out of nothing. Well, it's about where it should be right now.
If you started back when you could mine with the CPU and you sold when they were $32 a piece, you probably could have made
Yes, the best success story I heard was a guy who made $850,000 in profit after machine costs. That's a lot of money.
Well, energy costs are going up, or at least they fluctuate a lot. They're not real stable either. But real question I want to ask is, you say things like the end transactions are valued by the network, and it sounds like the coins are issued by the network. Well, who the hell is the network? Somebody must be controlling that.
No, it's peer-to-peer. It's like BitTorrent.
That doesn't explain anything.
Sure.
One at a time, please.
The network is you and me. I mean, you could be running it at home. I could be running it at home. I mean, everyone's helping out. And the reason why not just one person is able to take it over is because they'd have to fight with all of you to get control of the network.
Any of you belong to a credit union?
Yeah.
You're all owners, and they can only do things as long as all the owners agree. And the same thing, if you have one of these Bitcoin clients, you are one of the owners of the Bitcoin bank. And so in essence, unless they can co-opt every one of your machines and every one of you to agree with what they're trying to do, they can't.
Do they really need overwhelming control, or do they just need like majority?
Majority.
Yeah, so I'm saying, couldn't the NSA just take $50 billion, buy a bunch of supercomputers, and essentially crowd everyone else out of the network in about 6 months or so?
No, they could not.
Well, because the difficulty ramps up. Difficulty ramps up like every 2 weeks or so.
Yeah.
And why couldn't they just go make the difficulty so high that you can't mine even with like six GPUs?
There are two factors that are preventing that from happening. First off, locality. It's a peer-to-peer network, and not everybody's talking to everyone else. So these issues where the network splits can only happen to a small local group. And if over time that gets corrected, and so the network has time to react to an issue like that and overwhelm them. The other thing is that the mining resources put into place right now by just normal people making lots and lots of money off it worldwide is a lot more than the CIA.
Several currency exchanges exist where you can trade your bitcoins for dollars, euros, and more.
It's a lot more than the CIA is going to be able to come up with. I have like some idea of like how much energy they use in their data centers, and it's not enough. They can't do it. Not current rates.
Ready for my question? I don't remember hearing anything about history unless it was the moment when I was out of the room. But how did this come about? Who thought it up? And what is the theory behind it that somebody came up with and decided that this would work and how to make it work?
Very good question.
And particularly the business about the number of zeros in front and stuff like that.
It was actually designed on a news group that I frequent called Psy.Crypt. There's a really clever guy who's been on the list forever. He's not like a professor or anything, but he's a guy who's just really avidly studies crypto. He came up with the idea, posted it there, and then just got out of the way. And other people ran with it. It was a group of guys who built the client and just implemented it verbatim. They had to add a little bit more onto it as far as like how the currency levels off over time. And they actually did a very, very good job of it. There have been a few bug fixes over the last 3 years, but it's in a very good state. There are actually other networks like IXCoin and IOCoin, and as an example as to why you shouldn't get into those, a friend of mine came up with an exploit for IXCoin where they realized that in a few days' time, the network was going to split itself because there was a code bug in their client where it would stop accepting hash results from other people due to an issue with the way they were timing things. And as the difficulty increased past a certain point, they would no longer accept new results, and the network would just fragment all over the place. And that actually happened. So, yeah, the nice thing about Bitcoin is that it's been peer-to-peer reviewed as well as implemented.
Going back to what he was saying a minute ago about someone gaining a large portion of control for the network, I thought there was currently one stakeholder corporation country, I don't know, that had about 38% of the Bitcoining network.
Do you know which one?
It was a couple months ago when I read up on Bitcoin. I've slept since then.
I don't know. Well, it's probably a lot of private citizens, too.
Could you explain a little bit more about how the network's splitting and how that the network takes care of that? Because what if I did want to, at any cost, get control of this? I go buy as many computers as I can, put them on the internet, and bam, I've got billions of supercomputers, and I own 80% of the Bitcoin market.
You just spent a lot of money.
But for point of control from a government, as not profit.
Well, so what you're telling me is you're willing to spend $20 billion to make $10 million.
Right.
That's the problem. There's a real tangible cost in the hardware and power to do that. And once you do that, it diminishes the value of what you're trying to return. And so, in effect, what all you would do is crash the market, but you wouldn't corner the market and get value out of it. And there's nothing to stop anybody else from doing that, too. So Think of it as nuclear deterrence. If you can do that, I can do that, he can do that. And once you have everybody doing that, well, the market stays steady because the rate at which Bitcoins can be generated goes up. So the value of the hardware you just bought goes down. So you're spending more and more money to get less. So it's that's the beauty of it. It's kind of like having a nuclear reactor with control rods on it. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. Another side comment I could make off of that is that the technology to crack hashes has gotten really, really good since Bitcoins have started, because there's a monetary reason for people to crack hashes. That's what I'm talking about ASIC. There's actually a company who's going to be selling an ASIC Bitcoin miner in the next year.
Could you explain what, for those who don't know what an ASIC is, could you explain that?
Yeah, it's this is an actual chip as opposed to like a GPU or a CPU.
What's the acronym for ASIC?
ASIC. Application specific integrated circuit, I think it was.
Okay, a processor in your computer is what's called a general purpose processor. It's not designed for any specific task, so that allows you to give it a bunch of instructions, and we'll say it takes 1 million instructions to get it to do like Microsoft Office. However, an ASIC is a piece of hardware specifically designed for a very single and specific task, and it's optimized for performance. So to give you an example, if I use general purpose computers to try to crack an RSA key, it takes me years. If I use ASICs to crack an RSA key, it takes me 3 days.
When it comes to cracking, by the way, ATI graphics cards are a lot better than NVIDIA cards. If you've been looking at the ATI market recently, they don't stay on the shelves. Like the 5800, 6900 series has just disappeared. You can't buy them because the Bitcoin miners just buy them all out. There's a guy in Britain who buys every single one he can find because he wants to actually... There are people who are building businesses off of this, and they've got warehouses full of computers on really expensive racks, like those little tables at IKEA that have like a top, and then, you know, they're all like balsa wood or something. People are using those as rack mounts, and they'll put like just the bare PC components on that and stack them. It's like, it's amazing. If you go online and look at what I recommend you do if you want to get into this a little more, want to see something funny, look at look up Bitcoin pictures, and you'll find people's rigs that they've built for Bitcoin mining, and it's all like the cheapest stuff you can find. They've got like those floor fans pointing at their computers instead of buying real fans. It's really cool.
And there was a comment that I heard, something about back when you could use a CPU in order to mine, and now you need more than that. And can you kind of give an idea of what kind of computing power is required in order to perform some mining with the current mining tools that exist for Bitcoin?
Sure. If you want to make one Bitcoin per day right now, you have to have three computers. Each of the computers has to have two ATI graphics cards that are fairly high-end, and you need to have an extra fan over them so you can overclock them. That's the bare minimum to make any kind of profit off of it. Also, it's breaking even right now. You can't, unless you find a way to get free power, you're not making money off of it right now.
So if I had like a large amount of Bitcoins and I lost the private key for whatever reason, what would that do to the Bitcoin network?
Those coins are gone.
But could someone regenerate my coins?
No, they're just gone.
As an answer to the hash?
They no longer exist.
What exactly is the crypto system backing the private keys? And is it, if it gets to the point where we can like basically crack SHA-1 hashes
and start generating all of that, what's to stop people from just going into people's wallets and stealing their Bitcoins and sending them to themselves? Besides the fact that everyone would be doing it then.
It's elliptic curve Diffie-Hellman, I think, and elliptic curve signatures. I don't know if it's a Schnorr signature or actually ECDSA. I think it's ECDSA that they're using for the signatures. The hash is actually a SHA-256. SHA-256, I don't think there are any attacks against that. That's one of the NSA standards.
What is the significance of the ATI cards? How is it that the algorithm uses the processor, I guess, that's in the ATI card that's almost as good as an ASIC, or is it the ASIC that you're talking about?
Right now, there are no public ASIC implementation. It's all best mining is done on GPUs. For power efficiency, initial startup cost is higher for FPGAs. These are field programmable gate arrays. The startup cost is higher for each machine. It would be like $2,000 instead of $1,000 for a like a GPU-based setup. For a one GPU-based setup, it's more like $500 or $600. My bad. But for a FPGA implementation, the startup cost is higher, but the energy cost is much lower by like a factor of 10.
So maybe I belong on the skeptics track, but the question is, how is this good for society in the sense that if I'm on the gold standard and I go and I mine gold, I have a physical object in my hand that I can actually use to produce product to better the life of mankind. In this case, we're using energy, wasting energy almost, to create vapor. Right? And that vapor is just being out there, and people are saying, well, that has value. But it's vapor.
The man has a point. It's true that it's a much more unstable currency. There's less backing it because there are fewer people into it.
You have to waste energy to create this currency.
Really? It's not wasted if it actually can be traded for something of value.
That's one of the reasons why I like name coins, because even if you're not trading the coins, you're still doing a service by providing peer-to-peer DNS. I really like the name coin project for that reason. But also, gold is useless. It's like one of the least useful engineering materials there are. So,
no, but it's a scarce resource.
It's used very, very rarely. It's used for like vacuum chambers for sealing. It's used for
what's the amount of energy?
Very, very rarely, though.
Fort Knox, the gold does not cease to exist. They forget how to get in the building. The gold doesn't stop existing.
Yeah, that is one of the problems with bitcoins.
And how much energy does it take to print one fiat dollar versus creating one fiat bitcoin? Right? And which one is better for society as a whole? If it takes so many megawatts to produce $1 billion worth of, you know, bitcoins, but you can do the same amount with a few kilowatts on running the printing presses. They're both fiat currencies. Neither is good for society in general. But I would say that when you're spending that much energy to produce a single bitcoin, that can't be good for us.
Well, actually, you have to pay people to man the banks, and there's a lot of overhead with running banks, too. I would say that the human cost of running banks is higher than the energy cost of mining. I'm just guessing, though. I don't have statistics.
Okay, my question is other than mining, how does one make money or make money off the Bitcoin market?
How do you make money off of Bitcoin?
Or how do you get, yeah. How do you make money?
I don't think you can anymore. I think by bitcoins by themselves, you can't. They're actually a currency at this point. This is where they are at the moment. They're not an investment opportunity. It's too volatile. It's going to go up and down by a few dollars all the time. You want to use them right now if you want to buy things, or apparently if you want to take money that you've gotten illegally and transfer it into real money without, you know, letting anybody know where it's coming from. There was actually a bunch of accounts on Mt. Gox that were closed 2 weeks ago because $50,000 of like drug money was going through Mt. Gox, and they had to shut down those accounts.
Now there is an interesting effect that this is having. How many people in here actually operate machine rooms or groups of machines for companies? Well, two of us, three. Okay. Well, no. Give you an example. I work for a state organization called Georgia Tech. I have a machine room full of supercomputers and a lot of grad students with spare time on their hands. Yeah, you got the connection. Okay, well, there's also no matter how big the supercomputing infrastructure I have is, it's dwarfed by a 1.3 million machine botnet, which is made up of y'all's computers at home.
Yeah.
Right now, organized crime sends out spam emails to get you to buy Viagra. When you go in and buy it with your credit card, they charge real money on your credit card or run it up to its maximum, and they don't send you any drugs. Now, why does that work? Because when you go to the police and say, I tried to buy prescription drugs that were illegal without a prescription from this man over here, and he ripped me off. And they say, really? Show me that guy. And then they arrest both of you. So wait until they discover that I can mine bitcoins by simply using wasted cycles on all y'all's computers by installing a Trojan. Yeah, like SETI. So this is a real issue. We've started to look at how do we detect that this is going on in our systems. How do we determine if it's happening? Because think about it. How would you all feel if the state of Georgia came and took money from your paycheck every month so that some bad guy could then use the computing infrastructure it was used to buy it with to mine Bitcoin that you don't get any value from? Again, yeah. You see what I'm saying? In other words, your tax money is funding a university. Their equipment is illegally being used to mine Bitcoins for somebody who's a third party. That would be bad. Well, that's also becomes a problem for any organization that has a large number of computers. Take, for instance, Southern Company, which is the parent company for Georgia Power, has like 30,000 desktops. That's a big deal.
In partial response to his question, I work at Lockheed Martin, and you get the periodic wipe, you know. They just go in there and nuke and pave your desktop. So they're pretty sure that you don't have anything on there, you know. And if you've got something you want to keep, you've got to put it somewhere else, and they run it through a bunch of filters and all that. So what you got to do.
Yeah, that costs us real value. I mean, that's time and effort and downtime and people time and everything else.
Is that in reference to deterrent against people installing Trojans or?
Well, it's also for things like, you know, industrial espionage and all manner of hacks, because they have to do government contract work. So, yeah, they're making sure that there's no back doors. It's a preventative method to stop things without having to actually go to the trouble of dissecting and doing full-on forensics to figure out if a machine is infected with something you're not aware of, or something new, a zero day.
Does it matter if your system's open source or closed source, Linux or any of that?
No, the bit for what exactly? To use the software?
Bots are an equal opportunity employer. They have code that they're okay. What happened was the biggest problem was you had organized crime knows how to make money doing bad stuff, and programmers who actually know how to do all kinds of fun things with computers but don't know how to make money with it, and that's like a marriage made in hell, right? So one of the big problems is you had Eastern European countries fall, and all of a sudden you had PhD programmers working at McDonald's if they could get a job, mm-hmm. and organized crime said, how would you like a Ferrari and a dental plan? And the next thing you know, so right now, I do no longer battle a 14-year-old in his basement who's bored. I'm battling a PhD programmer in Russia or China, which is being backed by the government, where these guys are serious programmers. They really know what they're doing. And they're very organized, and they're very effective.
Yeah, we have that issue here in the States with such a high unemployment rate. It's not such a bad issue for the engineering STEM kind of people, but if you're out of work, one of the issues that that you have getting people into a classified program is if they have a lot of debt or they're really poor, it's easier to influence them. So this is why you usually get asked, well, do you have a lot of debt, a lot of college loans and things, when you go into that stuff. Also, the software is available for like Mac and Linux and PC, Windows PC, so you can use it on everything.
I think that was on...
Yeah, if you make it leveraged. Yeah, where was the program?
Yeah, where's the...
The hell is it? The transactional hashes are SHA-256 or ECC.
The hashes themselves are SHA-256. That's the thing that you're trying to brute force when
right,
you mine.
But the transaction that says guys pay him 550 with
Right. You give them the keys or the like account numbers that you're sending back and forth in Bitcoin. Those are wallet addresses, and the address is basically a public key. So the private key is in your wallet somewhere. Oh, because you have to you authenticate it with your private key.
There we go.
Yeah, it's a standard public key crypto stuff. Yes, that's what I recall from reading the spec.
Was the system designed in such a way that the crypto algorithm can be swapped out later as stronger methods become available?
I think you have to update the client code for that. Like, I don't think it's part of the network protocol anywhere. But there are plans to make changes to the code eventually for other issues.
Now, mind you, this is not the EFF track attempt to try to subvert the currency of the world and get you all to become bit miners. But there are people out there actually doing this. And so one of the things that we thought was kind of important on this track was to talk about the social effects of technology and the impact on privacy and security. And this essentially this puts a direct dollar value on having access to your machine without your knowledge. So it becomes a significant threat to you because, as we were saying before, there's an actual tangible cost in energy to run this bit mining. Well, your machine's going to be sucking power, and your power bill is going to go up, and you're not going to get any value out of it whatsoever if somebody owns your machine with these things.
It seems to me that this system, if you're going to use it for a real medium of exchange, as you said, has the problem that any online exchange does, in that you're not meeting the seller face-to-face to see what he has to offer. And yes. PayPal tries to fix that problem, although obviously they don't, and that's what they're taking all that fee for, is to verify that the seller actually has something to sell.
Yeah, there are actually many for software developers in the audience, there are many opportunities right now for you to make serious money. Like, this is still up and coming, and if it makes the New York Times, it's probably going to be around for a bit longer. Bitcoin joke, bit longer. So the thing I would get into right now, try to get into the things that work on top of the exchanges. Work on a way to offer credit cards backed by bitcoins. Work on things where you can get involved in that marketplace, because there are opportunities, like I said, the people who are making money in this are not the miners. They have already made their money. It's not going to happen anymore. People making money now are the people who sold the shovels. That's people like guys running Mt. Gox. They made a lamp application. One guy in his spare time set it up way early on, just got there before anybody else did because it was interesting to him. Now, I forget how much he makes a year. It was over like $1.5 million a year. But, I mean, you too can do something for this community that'll help everybody and get ridiculously rich in the process, because there are a lot of unsolved problems.
So I had a real simple question. Do they have fractional value? I mean, they seem kind of chunky if they're $8 or $10 a pop, and you want to sell something for like a quarter.
Right. Yeah. You can subdivide them down to I forget how many decimal places. It's a lot, and they want to make it more in the future as the value, as you know, the number of them reach some kind of final number of bitcoins. I think it was 15 million bitcoins was the total that they're working towards. Maybe someone else knows the real value. It was 15 million.
Where exactly do the bitcoins go? Because I remember the reason that we can they're allowing you to subdivide it into so many decimal places because a lot of them are just going to leave and go somewhere. And we're just only going to need to use, like, they're probably going to appreciate so much that we'll just need to use, like, decimals of bitcoins. And I'm wondering, where are those coins going? Because I remember hearing about transaction fees, but I think those go to the person who first discovers the block in the, well, the next block. Right, so those should stay, they should all stay in currency, in circulation.
Yeah, the transaction fee goes to that guy. That's where a lot of those bitcoins that you're getting rewarded with are coming from. The transaction fee right now is 0.01 for a transaction. If it's, and they only do that if it's like you just got the bitcoin and now you want to respend it right away. If it's been in your wallet for a certain number of hours, then they don't charge you that fee. So it's actually free. But as far as like Bitcoin is disappearing, I don't think that happens. I don't recall anything like that.
But then why exactly would we need to go down to millions of a Bitcoin?
Because I want to buy something. If a Bitcoin's worth 10 bucks, and I want to buy something worth a quarter.
Well, you don't need to go down to a millionth of a Bitcoin to buy it.
Oh. Well,
yeah,
eventually
and
you're
like,
going
to... It's never going to be worth $800.
Oh, you mean like the reason why? The reason why they want to do that. They want to be able to do that because eventually...
Yeah, but I mean, only, well, basically only nerds are buying bitcoins right now, and only and a lot of old people are buying gold. And there are a lot more old people than there are nerds.
Hopefully we'll all be nerds.
That will change over time.
But yeah, the reason why they want to subdivide more and more eventually is because you're going to have 15 million bitcoins and that's it. Or 21 million, is that what it is? You'll have a fixed number, and if you want to be able to split that across everybody on Earth, you're going to have to subdivide more and more and more.
Wait, what is the number?
21 million.
B or M?
Million.
Million. 3.1 times 10 to the well, that's nowhere near enough.
But you can keep subdividing it, and if you make the transaction higher and higher, like $30 per Bitcoin, 50, 100, eventually you can just subdivide it down more and more, and it'll work out.
Yeah, there was, I think I may be missing a concept here or maybe a little thing. Talked about a wallet a little earlier, having an encryption on the wallet, and if you lose that encryption, then those bitcoins are lost to the universe.
Yes.
All right. So here's kind of a thought. I know that I understand the concept basically behind hashing, but I also understand the concept behind collisions involved with that. So isn't there a possibility at some point that, and I know that we have the network that's checking and validating this, isn't there a possibility that someone could then begin to generate an algorithm that would go out and test collisions and then, you know, fail on some of those, but then find those coins that aren't in use anymore and then wind up generating those or regenerating those for use? Possible?
You mean like you want to find their private key by guessing and checking, or
it's not well, almost. It has to. It would basically have to do with hashing and cracking. I guess I'm thinking the keys or the bitcoins themselves have a hash associated with them. Is that not correct?
I don't think so. But maybe somebody who's more
because
familiar
you're using
with
a,
it.
You're using a hashing algorithm in the first place in order to create these, right? Or to find them, or to mine them is the term that's used for that.
Mm-hmm.
So why can't I mine lost coins is really what I'm saying.
I think that the mining part is kind of different from the spending part. Mining.
Coins are found, they're put in a wallet. And so all you need to do is find. Essentially, what you need to do is find some way to open the wallet to get the coins.
But if the wallet code is lost, then those coins are no longer available.
They're no longer available unless you can find the code to open that wallet.
So they're so the network says they're always in that wallet, but you can access that wallet.
Yeah, like they are in, like it's like they are available, but they're like it's like the $20 in my wallet. Yeah. It's available to be used. But someone has to get access, I have to get access to my wallet in order to use it. And it's essentially the same idea.
The wallet went down with the Titanic, $20 is still worth $20, but nobody can spend it.
Right.
So basically, if you want to dive down into the Titanic to get the $20, go ahead and you can spend it.
Or if you can crack a 2048-bit key.
Go for it.
If you can crack a 2048-bit key or a 4096-bit key, trust me, you won't be needing bitcoins.
Right, there are many better ways you could do that, or many better things you could do with that. I guess the only issue with the way it's implemented in terms of the authentication is, I mean, when we're able to implement a good quantum computer, which is on the near horizon, then they'll have to change to some kind of lattice cryptography or something that's resistant to that.
The thing to remember about the wallet is just like the wallet in your pocket. The coins are in there. If somebody gets your wallet, they have your bitcoins. The Bitcoin client, the last time I looked at it, does not encrypt your wallet.
Yeah.
There are Trojans out there that will look on your computer where that wallet is supposed to be and get that file and send it out. Now someone else has a copy of your wallet. Once they transfer those bitcoins into their wallet, then the ones in your wallet are no good anymore. They're gone.
And that,
yes.
And actually bringing up the thought kind of popped to me, why can't I go out then and pseudo mine some additional coins that are actually duplicates of coins and claim them as my own if it's resolved?
Because the mining process has an assigned problem to be solved. You're not solving that problem, you're not going to get credited with the Bitcoin.
Okay.
So if the wallet isn't encrypted at all, what purpose does a private key serve?
Well, nobody else has access to your computer, ideally.
Without physical security, there is no security. Oh, and by the way, you know, there's nothing to prevent you from taking that Bitcoin wallet and encrypting it in a file of your own.
Sure, but then the key... You have to store the key to decrypt that somewhere, too.
Yes, but I can keep that not on the computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were talking about KeyPass earlier. That's kind of what I would go for
yeah.
that.
So it sounds to me like there's a finite limit of 21 million of these coins. There's going to be a certain attrition due to just like hard drive failures, people like their wallet being destroyed effectively. So eventually you're going to have a lot less than that, right?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, also not all of them will be in circulation. People just don't care about them for a few years and then come back to it.
So that also seems like an additional hazard of using bitcoins as a currency. Like, oh, my hard drive crashed, all my money's gone.
Oh, my house burned down. My house burned down, and the money under our mattress is gone now.
Yeah,
it's the same problem.
Right.
You have to protect it physically. Okay, repeat after me the 11th commandment. Thou shalt back up. Trust me, if you come to me with a backup problem, you're not getting sympathy.
What's a backup?
What's a backup?
Well, I'll talk after the session.
That is a 30-minute panel. I was going to go next door to the transhumanists.
Someone just mentioned putting your wallet on Carbonite. What do you think about putting your electronic wallet in Carbonite, Dropbox, SugarSync, anything like that?
I think because the software needs to have a way to access it, it might be a little bit tricky. You could probably write a wrapper for it, and that would be another software engineering opportunity. One of the things that the developers are doing is they post bounties for things. Like, if somebody wants a better Bitcoin miner or a better client or something that does something for them, they'll say, do this for me, and I will pay you 30 Bitcoins. And then you get Bitcoins, and you get more software experience, and everybody wins.
Where is that?
On the site. There's a forum on this site.
Okay.
Yeah, you can find a lot of like past software projects that people have done.
My alarm's going off on this. Okay.
Any other questions? I can make one more comment on mining in general, something that's somewhat interesting. The people doing like ASIC designs, they're very expensive startup cost, and if the algorithm changes in the future, then that very expensive ASIC design is worthless. So that's one of the reasons why people aren't too interested in doing it, because the developers of Bitcoin can push an update, and now your very expensive design worth millions of dollars to you is now worthless to everybody else. Yes, that's why GPU mining is probably going to be where it's going to stay, and ATI cards are going to continue to be useful for it. Yeah, they'll try to solve that crypto challenge in parallel.
Okay, I was thinking, if it's just if you can basically use it to solve second free image, basically generate second free images for SHA-256 hashes, that's still really valuable.
Sure. Yeah. And I bet you money that the CIA or one of those three-letter guys has come up with something like that. They can blow a few million dollars on a new design. Somebody's done it. They just don't make it public because it's a weapon at that point. All right. So I'm gonna go ahead next door.
Okay.
Nice talking.
Thank you.
Well, we thank you. Yeah. Our impromptu speaker of the day. We talk about serendipitous. We had a discussion last week about this. A couple of security guys got together. We saw this thing about Bitcoin money. We went, what the heck is that? And we went and looked, and immediately we saw the danger to our systems if people got a hold of the systems and used them for bit mining. So we still don't know exactly how we're going to monitor things to see if they're doing it. So it's going to be an interesting problem.
Port 8333, just watch your net flow.
Port 83, it's hard-coded for port 8333. Thank you. Like I said, we talked about this last week. I haven't even had time to read the Wikipedia article yet. So, okay, port 8333. Okay, that's the Bitcoin port. So, well, I'd like to thank you all for coming to Dragon Con and coming to our last track. For those of you who are still awake, drive home safely, or in some of your cases, fly home safely. And we hope to see you again next year. So thanks for coming.